a pleasure to be here. First time in Fields Institute, but I did spend a lot of time in Ontario. I was at Waterloo, I hate to say how many years ago, but I was there visiting for a year as during the time when Jack Edmonds was active there, and Bill Cunningham was a student while and Pulley Blank were students while I was there. So it's a pleasure to be back and to also have a chance to visit McMaster's, and it's a pleasure to be here with Stefan doing a dog and pony show for airline optimization. This is joint work with Barry Smith, who is at Sabre Research Group. He's the director of the research group there, but he decided to be director of a research group. He really should have a PhD, so he came to Georgia Tech to get his PhD. So this is his thesis work. We also worked on incorporating better revenue models in the fleet assignment problem. And so he had two parts to his thesis. And this one is more finished. The revenue models we're still working on, trying to incorporate the revenue management model into the fleet assignment model to better model the revenue side. So I'm going to just talk about the standard fleet assignment model, except that I'm going to talk about notions of robustness, spoke purity, doing a kind of Danzig-Wolf decomposition that we call station decomposition, something that we do as it people who do this kind of thing refer to stabilization of the dual variables, that in the Danzig-Wolf decomposition, the dual variables tend to bounce around and the method is unstable and can just go on and on and on, have a long convergence. And so we have developed this convex combination, what we call a second stage master, in order to deal with that. And then, of course, we have to get integer answers to the problem. And I'll go back to talking a little bit about the robustness aspect. The fleet assignment model is one of the standard models in aircraft airline operations research. I assume you're going to talk about it just a little bit, Stefan. Yep, a little bit. We worked on this with at Georgia Tech with Delta Airlines in the early 90s, Nimhauser and me and Cindy Barnhard and Chris Haynes and Marston and different people, and we have to, Lloyd Clark. And then I've worked off and on with Sabre and American Airlines on it, and I worked with U.S. Airways as well, when they had an ample model that Russ Rushmeyer developed. So it's a widely used model. I would say that almost every major airline has some version of FAM, even the European and Asian carriers. American and Delta reported a 1% profit from FAM, and that was a lot of money. This was when they had profits, you understand. And it was originally deployed in the 1980s, but in the meantime the environment has changed. The main thing I'm going to talk about is these last two points, the impact on planning, marketing, and operations, the crew and maintenance planning and operations. So I'm going to talk about sort of integrated planning, too, as well as robust. Now, this is just a picture that Barry used for showing sort of the time horizon for planning in the airline industry, where at this point you're doing you're doing enterprise planning. So you're looking at the market you're going to compete in, setting up long-term things like maintenance bases, crew bases, facilities. This is product planning, what product you're going to put out there. And this is tactics and operations. Now, most of the planning really comes in the 3 months. Can be in between these two things, but comes in 3 months to time of departure. And the different tools are used for the setting up the schedule, the route structure, setting up the schedule itself, which is a product that's put out on the marketplace, and then revenue management where you get into operations. What is a fleet assignment model? It's given a flight schedule and available fleet of aircraft. You want to maximize operating profit subject to the constraints, operational constraints. I say about the fleet assignment model that this business, that you're maximizing operating profit, it's got a good objective function. It's got some faults in the way it's modeled, but it has a good objective function, just maximize profit of the airline. Now, it's assuming that the schedule has already been determined, so it's not clean sheet of paper maximizing profit. It's assuming that you've made up a schedule, you've bought your aircraft, you've got your crews deployed, and then you're saying, how do I deploy these resources into the marketplace in order to maximize profit, revenue minus cost. So there are some basic assumptions there, is that you're going to be able to solve the crew pairing problem afterwards. You're going to be able to maintain the planes and rotate the planes as well to keep them in maintenance. But it's a widely used tool, nevertheless, despite its shortcomings. It's widely used, and it's used in both a strategic and tactical planning mode. Basic constraints are cover, plane count, and balance. Cover simply says that each flight leg in the schedule must be assigned to exactly one aircraft type. Now, the thing about the aircraft types, that tells you how many seats you have on the plane. So it's determining revenue, and what we essentially want to do is put the larger aircraft where you've got more demand. So it's trying to put match the aircraft size to the demand on that leg. Plane, but it's subject to these constraints. A plane count is a total number of aircraft cannot exceed the number of planes available in the fleet. And balance, these two are related, actually. You obviously have to have as many, for each fleet type in a given station, a station is just the same as the airport. So for a given station and a fleet type, you got to have the same number of flights in as flights out. But this is a little bit more than that, because you've got to maintain plane count as well. So you've got a certain number of 737-800, so a certain number of Super 8s or 747s of a given type. And when we talk about a fleet type, you can look at it in two ways. But usually we mean the individual fleet types. That is, if you look at 737s, there may be three or four versions of 737s that a company has. And one reason for doing that, even the regional jets we were talking about, they will make crew compatible different versions. So the 737 kind of goes from 100 seats to 130 or 140 seats. And you've got different versions, so you can use the planes in a more flexible way, but with different number of seats on. However, when you talk about fleet assignments, you have to go down to the individual level because different, you wanted to put the right number of seats on the right flight. But when we talk about some of the constraints, we talk about the family, which is the 737s, the regional, the Embraer regional jets. I'm not going to go through this whole thing because it's just too much on there. But the network we look at is here. We're thinking of most of the time thinking of a daily problem, and these are planes on the ground between events. And then the planes that you carry overnight to the next morning. Now, this is for a given city, station, given fleet type, F, and then over time you've got arrivals and departures of aircraft, and you've got planes on the ground and planes that are carryover, so that you start the day with the same number of planes as you end the day. Now, of course, you may have flights arriving that flew overnight, or flights leaving that are going to fly overnight. So it's not that you can't fly overnight, but still, you can keep track of the planes on the ground in this way. So we've got airports indicated by capital A, flight legs indicated by L, fleet types indicated by F, times, nodes of the network. We have to keep track of plane count. We've got decision variables, which are assignment of flight legs to fleet types, and then we've got these ground arcs for planes on the ground, and that's used to impose balance and plane count. In our operational mode, there would be some other constraints, but we're going to just talk about the simple version. So the formulation has cover, this is cover, this is balance, and this is plane count. And these are 0-1 variables, and these don't have to be imposed to be integer, just non-negative integer variables. But there will be integer in the optimum solution. And the objective is to maximize the revenue minus the cost for a flight leg, for a flight leg L, or not quite sure, looks like an I. Anyway, for a flight leg and a fleet type. Now, you were asking about robustness. What do you really mean by robustness? How do you measure it? How do you impose it? The idea is to produce FAM solutions that anticipate subsequent planning and operational recovery. Operations, we want to limit diversity of aircraft types at stations in order to create more possibilities for crew swaps and aircraft swaps. You see, in practice, in operations, when you run into difficulties, the way it's usually handled is that you swap crews or you swap planes. You've got a crew that and a plane that come in late. You want to go ahead and get this plane out. So you look for a crew that you can use to get that plane out, and you swap the crews. And so the way we want to try to build in robustness is to limit. The ideal is that you've got a pure station, or pure spoke. A spoke is a station or an airport where you don't have a lot of activity. A hub is, there are traditional hubs, or true hubs, you could say, such as for Delta, their main hub is Atlanta. American has hubs at DFW and ORD. But we put in some big cities that are not necessarily true hubs. Going to talk about that. Now, in the planning stage, we can do the FAM so it's a reduced crew cost, because once you've done FAM, you've got to do crew pairings, and crew bid lines, and we're going to look at that as well. But you impose a bigger maintenance cost if you spread your fleets out all over the place. If you look at, we were using the American Airlines F-100 fleet, and they do this kind of thing because they don't just spread that fleet all over the country. They use two hubs, ORD and DFW, and they just fly in and out of ORD and DFW, and they don't fly all over the Northeast or all over the California with them. So the airlines do try to build in this kind of limitation, and so we're just doing it systematically. Station purity makes FAM solutions more favorable to crew planning and maintenance planning and operations. Now, when this is an important point here, family purity is what we really want, because if you're going to do maintenance on an aircraft, what matters is 737 maintenance is the same virtually on all of the aircraft. The difference in them is sort of stretched bodies, but the engines are the same, the cockpits are the same. I mean, hopefully. There are sometimes where you got an older 737 and a newer 737, and they may not be the same. And that they would not be in really in the same family, even though they are both called 737s. But if you take Southwest Airlines, which is one of the few profitable airlines, they maintain for a very long time a single fleet of 737s. But it's difficult to do because they've got older versions and newer versions, and in order to do that, they had to degrade the cockpits of the newer ones to look like the cockpits of the older ones. And they're gradually moving toward, so they got two fleets now, even though they're all 737s. So what we impose is family purity. And we don't just say every station has to be pure because we tried that and you lose too much profit, too much revenue. But we are interested in minimizing the number of station family pairs. Station purity is not a bad constraint. I mean, you can model it. We've got the purity level. Purity level here, you can say, is this SP. So that could be one or two typically. And W is a variable, a 0-1 variable that tells you whether that fleet type is flown at that station. And you can't fly a leg, you can't assign a fleet type to a leg unless the fleet type is assigned to that station. So it's not a totally unrealistic kind of thing to just throw into a FAM model. However, I'll show that it does significantly hurt the integer programming solution. This was from the STAR and INT7. Those were a weekly schedule of an international carrier, a rather small international carrier. And the STAR 7 was just a reduced size version of their schedule. Those are not too important. The U.S., the two U.S., this is just at the family level and the individual fleet level, and is for Delta Airlines. Everybody thinks it was American because Barry is in Dallas, but it wasn't really American. And it was just he had access to this schedule, so that's what he ran. The test environment was essentially Barry's laptop running Alog CPlex using Alog Concert, which is a C++ modeling language. Now, BAM, when we first started with Delta, this was a hard problem to solve. But today, the FAM, just a regular FAM with no purity, runs pretty fast. I mean, this is just CPlex getting an integer solution. And the times in seconds are over here. LP took longer to solve than the IP. You do pre-processing on the IP before you go to solving it, typically. And that pre-processing is now built into CPlex anyway, so most of it is done automatically. And you can see that the IP solves very quickly. Now, to go back to station purity, the base case was no purity. This is looking at the U.S., the families of seven fleet types. It includes the RJs and ATRs, so it includes some smaller fleet types that would have been flown by, for example, ASA. The RJs are flown Atlanta to Toronto, but so are I don't know where the Super 80, oh, the M8 is here. They fly these two fleet types into Toronto. RJs are those little planes, that regional jets, that have 60 or so passengers on them. Now, what this graph shows is the station served by each fleet type. This is the base case. This is with moderate purity imposed and with maximum purity imposed. And you can see that it comes way down. The number of combinations, the singleton is where you fly one flight in and one flight out of a station with a fleet type. And you don't really like that, especially if it's overnight, a short overnight. It leads to what's called double overnights for the crew. The only way you can cover it without deadheading is that the crew spends two nights there and catches. So it's a very expensive proposition. Total combinations were 630. When we went to moderate, this went down to 33 and 357. So we were able to reduce it quite a bit. Moderate is sort of the right level here to impose. However, when you impose purity, those FAM solutions, which were phenomenally fast in the IP stage, go way up. This is on a log scale, so it's the one that really matters are these two out here. And the times go up by 10 to 30 or 50, depending on how much purity was imposed. So it becomes a much more expensive proposition. And to get around that, we introduced this station decomposition model. We impose a plan, a spoke is a small station. Hub is a big station. It's not necessarily a true hub, but it's a big, busy station. And if you've got a hub and spoke, we just look at the connectivity of it so that the hub is here in the middle and we've got these spokes out. So planes fly in and out of the hub, in and out of the spoke back to the hub. And you can have some round robins. I'll show that later, but we reduce the number of rows, but we have a lot of spoke plans, so we have to do column generation. we can put station level constraints into the spoke plan without it slowing down the solution procedure that much, including purity. This is with the star network. You would have the master problem, and so it's a Dantzig-Wolf decomposition scheme, and you would have four subproblems. General network, where you got round robin, there are two ways to do it. You can make a hub, or you can make AB a spoke network rather than a single spoke. And probably you do the second way to do it, because unless A was really pretty busy and you didn't want to make such a big spoke plan. So we're balancing between small master size, which is a low number of hubs, and a small subproblem size, which is put in more hubs. I'm not going to go into this. The master problem now has looks much the same, except that we've got this. These constraints are really like convexity constraints in Dantzig-Wolf decomposition. So we've got variables on this plan level, and we've got variables, x variables on the hub-to-hub part. So when you've got if you had a true star network, you wouldn't have any hub-to-hub part. But if you look at a delta, there would be flights from, of course, they have flights from Atlanta to Cincinnati. And that it's both of those are hubs, and Atlanta to LA would probably go in too. Then the subproblem is much like a little FAM, and so the cover constraints go into the subproblem. You've got balance at the station, and you've got the purity constraints as well. The reason it works is this is such a small problem, it doesn't really matter that you impose these purity constraints. If you really got a small spoke, you can enumerate the plans, especially if you're imposing it be just one fleet type, that's easy to enumerate. You just you've got one plan for each fleet type. This is a really just a typical Dantzig-Wolf decomposition flowchart. You solve the master LP, bring the dual solutions down to the subproblems, you generate new columns, and you loop through that until you have solved the LP to a satisfactory level, small enough reduced cost. And then you solve the MIP problem over the columns that have been generated. We're not doing what's called branch and price here. We don't go back and generate more columns in the MIP phase, which would perhaps improve quality of the solution. But we have enough complications as it is. We do get optimum solutions compared to the station, not using station decomposition. Now, here, the thing to look at here is the two big problems, the two delta problems. And when we have mod and max, we're much faster in getting solutions to the problem. This convex combination idea is in the dual improvement approach. The quality of plans generated is limited by the quality of the current dual solutions. So what we do is we have a sub a second stage master, which iterates over convex combinations of the optimum dual solution in a convex region defined by the previous dual solutions. We use both. One option is just to use the last two solutions, and then you're just looking on the line between them. The other is to limit it to 10. Usually, if you limit it to 10, it doesn't. You get all that you would use anyway. So you go back to the last 10 solutions, and you look at that convex region for where the duals might lie. And we do column generation within this second stage master. So we are able to do column generation on a much smaller master problem. And this is the dual stability question. You're able to make Danzig-Wolf into a true dual ascent algorithm, a dual improvement algorithm. It reduces the number of major iterations and the CPU time. This kind of shows the picture that you've got some number of dual solutions and you've got to stay in that convex region. We where it fits in the flow chart is you solve the subproblem. If you get new columns, we go to the second stage master and we stay in this loop until we don't get any new columns in the second stage master. What it means is, if you're looking at this in a dual, we've optimized over this region. Typically, it's not optimum because you can go outside the region. So the optimum may be at an edge, not in a, or there's another dimension as well. So it doesn't have to be at the edge. It could be in the middle. This just says that it was at the first minor iteration, says that you didn't get any new columns at all. And either in the original master or the second stage master, so you just go out and solve the mixed integer program. So we've added this little loop here, which generates new columns. I'm going to skip this and just look at the. The best improvement was on the biggest problem. And we got, for the moderate, which is the kind of level that we need, we got about a third of the running. We got about a third of the running time of the FAM without station decomposition. Now, we did run into some problems getting integer answers to this. Well, at the end, where you come down and you get integer answers. This was also true in the work where we used the revenue management combined with FAM, that we had trouble with the integer answer part of the problem. What we did was we developed a fix and price heuristic so that you fix and later unfix variables during the time you generate new columns. This allowed us to do a common heuristic in these problems is what's called diving. You just fix and you don't never go back and unfix. Well, we don't want to get into branching because it gets to, I mean, that's what we're going to do eventually because we have to, but we would like to do some pre-processing without it. And this allows some flexibility in that you can look at the reduced cost of a column. Even though you fixed it, you've still got the reduced cost. And if the reduced cost says that you would like to use it in the LP, but you fixed it, so it's gone, say, well, let's just bring it back. So it allows you to shuffle around the variables that are fixed and results in a more effective initial heuristic before we turn it over to CPLEX to get to do branch and bound. Now, it is true that our station decomposition LP relaxation is tighter than FAM, and that means that the gap is smaller, but it seems that we get more fractions in the solution and that the MIP running time is not necessarily smaller. So we use that. This is a the fix and price heuristic we use. Fix a plan variable close to 1, we fix it to 1. Solve the master. If the profit drops below a specified threshold, we unfix the low reduced cost variables, add a cut to avoid this solution in future iterations, generate new plans, and go back to step 2. So we do this fixing and unfixing until we are satisfied that we fix enough variables and we haven't hurt the profit, and then we go ahead and solve the MIP. Now, again, I would like to look at these two biggest problems mainly. These are much bigger problems than the weekly regional international problems. These are the MIP results. The FAM, when you got to the purity on these biggest problems, the 19 fleet problem, it was 8,600 something seconds, 2,100 seconds. Gap was 0.2 and 0.04. Our times on these purity problems were 115 seconds and 260 seconds. Here the times 188 and 92, and ours are 15 and 16 seconds. And the only place where our gap was slightly worse than the FAM gap was this one, where it was 0.2, ours was 0.33. But generally our gaps were smaller, as well as our times were faster. Now this shows family purity. This is what we really want to impose, family purity in the 19 fleet problem. So we take the 19 fleet. That gives us a better revenue approximation. You got to do the individual fleets to get the right number of seats and be able to get the revenue right. But the operational constraints are at the family level. So we did the 19 fleet problem, but the purity was imposed on the at the family level. And this shows the profit. We lost a little bit, 0.03. percent, $0.03 million. So daily, $30,000 a day, and lost more going to the max. So we want to focus on this mod, because the mod is a reasonable level, very little loss in profit, and we can still solve it. $4,800 to solve it. Most of that was in the LP phase, not in the IP. You can see it's only one node. And then we ask American Airlines maintenance people about in the operations research group. They said that the fleet station combination increases annual operating costs by about $500,000 a year. This is because you've got to maintain spare parts, you've got to have mechanics, And if you can avoid dispersing the fleet, you can save that much money. Now, what we did was we imposed a penalty based on what that would be per day. And so we built in a penalty on the station fleet combinations. And so in the moderate purity case, this was the right penalty, $1,500. The net profit went up because of the taking into account the cost of the reduction in the station fleet pairs. The fleet station pairs are 508 there, 370 there. So we changed it by 138. And that was enough to make the profit difference was only 0.03 anyway, so we brought it back up above it. Now we looked at the crew pairing problem for one of these. We looked at the RJ fleet, and we looked at it with a base FAM solution, no purity constraints, and the moderate and max purity FAM solutions. And the base case FAM for that fleet was really terrible. But we use the rules from Sabre for a Klein IRAM. So we use typical rules for the same rules for all three. The base case was 26.2%. Now I was talking yesterday about it being in the range, typically being in the range of 4 to 5 and down to almost 0%. We did reduce this a little bit with some better crew pairings, but these were all run with the same codes, same rules. And we got down from 26.2% to 5 to 4. Well, this was a good number. And so the moderate purity was the one we really focused on. And this was how much take into account crew cost, the base solution taking into account the crew cost, excess crew cost and maintenance cost was $18.25 million. Our taking into account the same cost with the station purity model was 18.61. So we got better profit just from looking at the scheduling, the downline scheduling. Now we expect that operational recovery should be comparable. There's reason to think it would be even better, that the station purity would give you even better results. I mean, even more cost reductions than we got from the downline planning. So why is clustered fleets more robust? Leads to clustered crews. You can swap pilots if, for example, a flight is late getting in and cuts the crew rest too much. So you've got crews overnighting, and some of them have a relatively short overnight, maybe 10 hours. If the plane is 2 hours late, they can't overnight and go out on the next plane the next morning, but you may be able to take a different crew and have them go out with the morning departure. And the airlines like to have the morning departure go out on time. You can swap planes as well. You have fewer overnight maintenance stations because there are more planes of a given fleet on the ground at the places where you do over. They usually do overnight, these routine overnight maintenances are done at the hub, of course, but they're done at a lot of the spokes too, because the planes don't spend the night at the hub. They spend the night at the spokes. So this is the conclusions. Robustness is potential benefits and computational. Well, we looked at the potential benefits and the computational issues associated with fleet and family purity. developed a station decomposition model that's a Danzig-Wolf type decomposition. Did it get a workable formulation for General Airline? We developed a dual improvement algorithm and to make it more efficient and cuts down on the number of iterations to solve the problem. And then a fix and price approach to get the MIP solutions in a reasonable amount of time. Well, if I could just tell a story. When we started with this Delta FAM, we were looking at the MIP